girls' boundary setting and assertive communication, standing up for themselves, believing that their voice and their opinion are valuable. Because I think girls learn when they're really young that they should be nice, they should be kind, and they should make sure that other people like them.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
18 Summers Tribe, we're here with Lisa Hinkleman. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to see you today. Now, you wrote Girls Without Limits, and you just released your second edition. How long have you been working on Girls Without Limits?
Well, my work in the girl serving space has been over 15 years. My work actually started, I was a professor at Ohio State in counselor education, but also a counselor, like working in schools and community agencies and organizations. And so I started working specifically with girls and women 20 years ago. And then my research interests really centered around the experiences of girls and young women. And my dissertation was in that space. And then my faculty research was right in that space as well. And so after being at the university for several years, you kind of think like, are there other things that I should be thinking about doing? Or should I stay and be a professor for the rest of my life? And so I stayed at Ohio State for about 8 years. And then that was the work behind the introductory work behind what I'm doing now, which is running a nonprofit organization focused on girls and researching the experiences of girls, and then writing about what I've learned and sharing it with the people who have girls in their lives.
But Lisa, why? Why did you start? What was your...
Yeah.
Like for us and here at 18 Summers, you know, our gift, our purpose is right next to our pain. And it was born out of our need for what we have. What's your story?
I think that the organization that I run called ROCKS, and that stands for Ruling Our Experiences, probably, if I'm being honest, emerged out of what I wish I had when I was in middle school. I was that girl who my family moved to a new school when I was in fifth grade going into sixth, which is a really hard time. Anyway. And I was a tomboy, had two older brothers. I liked sports and I was rough and I didn't really fit in with all the other girls. And so it was kind of hard for me to make friends at this new place. And I was also blessed by being one of those early developers, right? So I'm the girl who's like bigger than not just all the girls in her class, but also the boys. And so it was just such an awkward, funky time for me. And it took me a while to get my feet under me, probably well throughout high school and maybe even into college. And so I always felt like I was too much or not enough, right? I was too big, too loud, too opinionated, too something. And then I just wasn't enough. I wasn't skinny enough. I wasn't feminine enough. I wasn't this enough. And so I think that lived experience made me want to ensure that other girls figured out how to navigate their experiences. But then also as I started studying psychology and got into the counseling field, I really realized that like I wasn't the only one having all of these experiences, even though I thought I was. And I wasn't the only one who felt this way, experienced herself this way, felt insecure. And so when I got to doing more work with other people, and especially girls and women, it made me realize like, hey, girls need something really different. And we're not meeting their needs and we're not doing a great job for them. And we're not doing right by them. And so I think it was kind of this combination of lived experience versus intellectual curiosities that brought me to a place of like, hey, wait, this is a problem and we can do something about it.
So you're really serving little Lisa.
Probably.
We all are. I mean, me and Jamie say we're definitely serving our younger selves, the things we wish we had had. You know, and something interesting, Lisa, you know, reading up on all of your material and messaging, when we went home, even if we went home and things weren't great, you know what I mean? You had almost a sanctuary space from that awkward age. Now, today, like you talk about, the kids don't have that. Social media follows you home. So imagine if things aren't great at home, which they weren't in certain years of my life when I was little. So now you're not having good things at home, but even that pressure that you thought you had a sanctuary and kind of break from has followed you and might even be tougher at home with the social media. Would you agree?
Oh, I 100% agree. Like, I knew that if I was having a hard time at school, like, get me to Friday and I'm cool, right? Because I had other groups, like I played sports with different people on the weekends, or I had my youth group friends, or, you know, there was these other places to kind of get away from the stuff that caused the most angst for me.
Yeah.
And you could shut it off till Monday morning. Yep. And that is not the reality that kids have today, because there's not even that get home from school at 3 and have the reprieve until 7 a.m. the next day.
No.
There's no break from it. And so when we ask, like, why are our kids so anxious? Why are they experiencing such rough moods and big mood swings and all of the mental health challenges? Because there's no reprieve. And I think that we've got to be able to crack the code on this, because we're seeing the implications of this ongoing, constant hypervigilance in our kids.
And what do you think of these? What can the parents do as the roles to help protect? But also, if you take it completely away, it's the forbidden fruit. And some are, you know, we have different age ranges and things, but what are you kind of coaching parents to do on this slippery slope? This, you know, it's very dicey.
Yeah, when it comes to social media, it's so hard because people have such vast views and perspectives and beliefs about and understanding about the role and function and impact of social media. And so I think that what research is showing us is that delaying as long as we can is not a bad thing. And while there doesn't appear to be a magic right age, it does seem that the further we can push out the engagement with technology and social media and constant connectedness, that kids do seem to be faring better. They will complain that they're left out and that they're not part of the group text and they're never invited to anything and their friends have to figure out other ways to get in touch with them. And so there is that other side of it to have to manage. But I think for the folks who are working with younger kids, I see a lot of by fifth grade, every kid has a phone.
Wow.
That was not us.
Crazy.
We were old fuddy-duddies then.
Yeah. And so it's getting younger and younger. Before it was maybe sixth or seventh. And now, depending on the environment, we have programs in about 400 schools across the country. And so we often are polling and surveying what's happening in schools to get that temperature. So now most are saying like fourth on to fifth grade is that kind of magic age. And the other thing I think about social media is that I didn't grow up with it. And so I can't even... What's that?
I'm really grateful for that. There's
oh my gosh,
me things too. That I'm like, ooh, I'm glad nobody knows, you know?
For real. I always say like, I wouldn't have a job. You know what I mean? Like if everything I did in high school and college was like out there on blast, I don't know. It'd be a rough go for me. But when I think about the experience of kids now, it's like, we can't even relate. So we can't pretend to know. And I think so often we try to say like, well, I was your age once and I understand how you feel. And when I was in eighth grade, this is what was happening. And so I get it. And we have to quit saying that, because even as young or as hip or as connected or as cool as we think we are not living this life in this moment with this access to the information that our kids have right now. And so I think instead of trying to convince them that we get it and that we understand, we have to switch that completely and say like, you know what? I don't get this. Like, help me understand what's happening. Help me understand what the conversations are looking like. Show me what you're following on TikTok. Cause I'm like really curious. But I don't necessarily get it all. I think when we try to say like, I get it, we create more disconnect. Cause they're like, you are so old and you're so irrelevant. You don't get it. So we just have to acknowledge that we don't.
That's a powerful mind shift for me, because I do think we have 18 down to 3 months. And so for me, I think so much of when they experience things, those older teens, and I'm like, some of what you experience is like normal hormone. I don't want to discount what you're experiencing, but just know like some of this is things that over the like length of life, like everybody goes through some of what you're feeling. And then there might be other things that are contributing to how you're feeling. Is this social media crisis, like you're saying, always bringing home this toxicity, is that one of these critical issues that you speak on?
Oh, I think 100%. And it's not one that was present when my work began in this space. Mm-hmm. So the initial research behind ROCKS and the work started in 2006. Like that was my first research study that really centered on girls. And social media wasn't a thing in 2006. Wow. Facebook was like just getting off the ground. And now you say Facebook and kids are like, ew, Facebook, my grandma's on Facebook.
Yeah.
But so like our first iteration of the work and the experiences and lessons that we kind of put girls through in this program had nothing to do with social media.
Wow.
And their lives were complicated then.
Absolutely. Yeah, so what were the original critical issues that we now still have, but on addition?
Now they're amplified, right? Yeah. I think some of the big things are girls' relationships with each other. They get very competitive, intense, starting in elementary school. And then girls see this divisiveness and these modeling of not supportive other girls and women, right? Yeah. And so in our research, we surveyed over 10,000 girls, and about 75% of fifth grade girls said that most girls were in competition with each other.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. And so girls talk about drama and girls being mean and spreading rumors, you know, and so girls learn really early that other girls are your competition, not your support, and that you have to do better than or get more attention than. And they don't necessarily learn, because it's not modeled for them, how to see girls as their tribe, as their girl gang, as their people who are going to support them. And so that has been a persistent theme throughout this work. I think some of the other things are around girls' boundaries setting and assertive communication and standing up for themselves and believing that their voice and their opinion are valuable. Because I think girls learn when they're really young that they should be nice and they should be kind and they should make sure that other people like them. And what they don't always get reinforced is that they also have a right to set boundaries and stand up for themselves and say no, and learn how to do that to maintain healthy and respectful relationships with friends and in dating situations. And so that's been a pervasive theme that we've helped girls navigate. And then I think some of the things like body image and what my appearance, we know that body image is so connected to confidence levels for girls and women. It's actually, in some research, one of the most predictive factors of how girls rate their own levels of confidence is how they feel about their own bodies. And with the media messages and what we're exposed to about beauty and a very Eurocentric view of beauty, girls learn really early that their value comes from their appearance more than any other trait. And so think about how each of these things I've mentioned is only more complicated with the overlay of social media.
Right? So now, magnifying glass.
Now they used to be able to go home and get into your comfy clothes in the mud and do it, you know, if you're tomboyish. But instead, you're supposed to be kind of having a model shoot of at least 3 to 4 filtered photos before the next day. And if not...
Or snap everyone. You know,
and then you have to defend it if someone says something not good about it. So like you said, the amplification is stunning. I've watched it. And again, being, I think, sexist in a positive way, Jamie and I have talked about this, where I think the guys, when I grew up, we had bigger groups of friends. And I joke, we were big, dumb animals. Like, oh, okay. And, you know, not that we didn't have competition in that, but it seemed like the girls, you're right. And I never looked at it like that. There was more infighting. Like they isolated to smaller groups instead of being like, yo, this is my tribe. We're all in this together. And guys had a little more of that. And I think it does, to a point, make it easier on the boys. And I could be wrong, but what do you think on that?
Well, I think one of the other things that we see is sometimes when guys have a conflict, they'll just have it out and it's over. That tends to not be. Yeah. Right. I mean, because it's not like, oh, whether it's a physical fight or whether, however, that tends to be, it blows up and then you're cool. That tends to not be the way that girls manage conflict. And I mean, I've talked to girls who are like juniors, they're in 11th grade and they're like, I hate her. And I'm like, well, why do you hate her? I've hated her since second grade. And I'm like, what? Like, you were 7, you know, you were 8. And just that the way that girls are taught to approach conflict doesn't really allow for that assertive kind of communication, right? To say like, that was not cool that you didn't invite me to that party. And then you posted all those pictures on Instagram. Like, why would you do that? We instead be like, oh no, it's fine. So like girls learn more of that passive or passive aggressive communication style that doesn't lend well to healthy, authentic relationships or to conflict management. Yeah. And so that inability to speak their mind that inability to feel that what I have to say is important and you should respect it. I think that all contributes. So girls use their relationships to be mean to each other through their kind of relational aggression. And boys tend to, they use some relational aggression, but not as much as girls do. And so when we use those relationships to decide who should be in which group, or if you get to sit with me, or if you're invited to my party, then we see that persistence of that really unhealthy communication styles. And like, I know that we're not teaching girls anywhere how to be assertive and how to use that healthy, open communication in ways that will benefit their relationships, because it's just not seen as very feminine.
Now, is this what you're teaching through ROCKS and through Girls Without Limits? Okay. So you're teaching.
Yeah. So a big part of our curriculum focuses on, it's a 20-week curriculum, ROCKS. And what we do is we train and license school professionals. So like school counselors and school social workers and educators. And so they come to us for a 3-day licensure training. And we teach them all of the research and backgrounds and then how to implement this 20-lesson curriculum at their school with girls. And so we work with girls in 5th through 12th grade, and we tackle all of these big issues, right? We focus on team building. We focus on passive, aggressive, and assertive communication. We take on even pretty severe things like helping girls navigate sexual harassment and stand up to sexually coercive or violent situations. I think what, if I were to say it in a few words, is we take all of the places where I see girls listening to, hearing, or internalizing negative or restricting messages about what they can be, and then give them some skills to push back against it. So whether it's careers where they're plotting their future and not seeing women in spaces of power or prestige or high paying places, or whether it's in a relationship where they're not being respected, or whether someone asks them to send a nude, right? It's like all of these real life scenarios, I want our girls to have some skills in their back pocket to be able to manage.
Now, how do we, so I understand your program is in schools and you have your book, Girls Without Limits. How do we as parents start to build, teach our daughters the way in which you're saying, or our nieces or whomever they may be, you know, some of these skills, children that maybe aren't in one of your schools that have the program? What are some top things that we can do that build trust starting at an early age? We have a 7-year-old daughter that we work really hard on. Everybody in the house, when, before she could even walk, I'm like, nobody's allowed to say they're fat ever. Like, nobody's allowed to look in the mirror and act like they're disgusted. And nope. it's a house full of males. But I am like, we're not objectifying women. We're not talking about somebody being that, you know, all of these things, because I don't ever want her to look in a mirror and think anything negative about herself, more so than my boys. And I know, you know, that is sexist, but it's like, it's the world that we live in, unfortunately. You know, men aren't really airbrushed the same way that women are. You know, and dad bod was a thing, but mom bod was never a thing. Like,
never a thing.
No one was ever like, let me see that, you know, like that C-section flap that women rock all the time. You know, like that was never hot.
No.
And it probably won't ever be. And so I just think it is the huge, and boys face lots of other things, from male toxicity to like lots of big roles in other ways. How do we start at a young age with these young women, young little girls, you know?
Little girls. I know. So ROCKS is a nonprofit that focuses on girls. And that was where my work was, just like, how are we going to get to these girls? How are we going to get to these girls? And then I realized that, well, we're sending these girls back to families and classrooms and sports teams and communities and environments that aren't reinforcing what we're trying to teach them, because these other adults don't necessarily have the skills or the experience or haven't had the opportunity to learn. And so that was really like why I wanted to write the book, is, okay, here's what we've learned. And here's what we think is really important to pass on to the adults through research and experience. This is what I think parents and teachers and counselors and anyone who has a touch point or an influence over girls needs to know. So that's really what Girls Without Limits is that tool and that resource for the adults. And for me, it's, as you mentioned, it starts with the relationship and it starts with the communication and ensuring that that becomes compromised at some point, right? We know that those middle school years are a time where the child tries to pull away and create some independence. And the parent often wants to dig in even stronger because this child that they have such a close bond with, the relationship is changing. And that's not necessarily a comfortable place or a comfortable thing. And so sometimes the more that parents try to dig in, the more that the child tries to push away and establish that very appropriate developmental task of independence. But I think that opening those lines of communication early and then maintaining them throughout, I couldn't agree with you more. It is a critical and pivotal aspect of helping that child navigate those hard things that are coming. Because if they don't feel like they can come to you because they're going to be judged or shamed or embarrassed or get in trouble, they'll go find the answer somewhere else. And what we hear from girls is like, I just want you to listen to me. I want to be able to come to you and you don't have to fix it. You don't have to solve it. I just need you to hear me and I need you not to yell at me. And so what I think that girls are experiencing is going to the adults in their life about big issues, and either the adults want to solve the problem. Well, who is that kid? I'm calling their mom. I'm going in and talking to the principal. Why would you do that? Why would you think that was a good idea? And then she's going, I don't want to talk anymore. Instead of like, all right, let me walk alongside you for this. And then what we see happen is that then girls are going to their friends or to others because they don't see us as that soft place to land. And they don't see us as the person who is going to walk alongside them in the way that they need us to. Do they want to solve the problem or do they just want to be listened to? Do they want us to brainstorm with them how they can react or respond in the next thing? Or do they just need empathy? And so for what we see and hear from girls, that relationship cultivation is a, if not the key factor in maintaining that communication, that open dialogue, and that ability to be the influence that you want to be. And I think for most of us, we want our kids to go through the hardest things that they're going to go through with us alongside them. Absolutely. To walk with them and teach them so that when they have to do it by themselves, they already know what it feels like because they've already done it successfully with us, holding their hand and being there with them. I don't know. I would imagine when your kids have their first breakup, you want to be there, the soft place to land for them and help them analyze that and deal with it and put themselves back together so that when they're away at college and they experience another breakup, they've had the chance to know what that feels like with your love and support and guidance. So it's not this first time and I'm all by myself figuring it out.
I think you said something really important about, do they want you to solve it? Do they want you to listen? It's probably important to ask that question, like, hey, I'm here. Are you wanting me to listen? We've talked about this in our relationship and I've never really thought about using it with our children because I just think they just always want my opinion.
Well, we've learned whether it's with Jamie or my kids, I'm a solver. Let me solve this. We got to, because it's,
and I'm like,
your heart's in the right place, but your effectiveness is not. So, and I've learned that I'm not here to solve. I'm here to listen. Sometimes solving comes up, but it can't be the first thing out of your mouth, because that can work against you for sure.
Yeah. And then it reduces the times that they might talk to you in the future, right? If you get into that protective mode or into that solving mode, they might then think twice before sharing the next complication with you, because sometimes it's easier for them to try to manage it on their own than manage your emotions too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very true.
Well, and where I know, you know, you have the second edition out of Girls Without Limits coming out. Where can people learn more about you, Lisa?
Yeah. So Girls Without Limits is on Amazon and it is the second edition. My website for the nonprofit is rulingourexperiences.org. And there's all kinds of, not just information about the book or the program, but there's a whole research institute side of that site that has all of the data that I've been talking about, disaggregated in little infographic reports. There's little 7 to 12 minute videos about different topics like building girls' confidence or helping girls stand up for themselves, different areas of expertise that I bring and that our work brings in accessible content for parents who are and adults who are trying to do the right thing and have the right conversations and be the right role models, but maybe just don't know where to start. And so for us, we want to not only be giving girls the tools, but then giving the adults the tools, because this stuff is pretty hard.
Absolutely.
Well, we have a finale question that we always try to ask. And it's something, you know, we all say, you know, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? Great question. But start of the pandemic, Jamie and I started to ask for a little bigger wisdom. And we said, what would our 75-year-old self say to us today? What advice would they give to us or to others? So we wanted to ask you, especially with all your experience, what advice would 75-year-old Lisa give to you and to the rest of us today?
Oh, man. I think I would say to be gentler on yourself.
I love it.
You know, I think we get into these modes where we feel like we have to be perfect at everything. And we have to throw the perfect birthday party for our kid, and we have to lose that baby weight so fast, and we have to be perfect at our jobs, and we have to be the perfect friend and the perfect partner. And we create this sense of angst in ourselves. And then our girls are watching us trying to put on this whole perfectionistic front. And then when it all comes down to it, to what end?
Yeah.
You know? Yep. And so right. I think so much, we just need to take a step back and be like, you know what? I'm not going to be good at everything all at once. I could be good at a few things at once, but not all of it. Right. So that would be my all thought. Said.
Wonderful.
Be gentler to yourself. I love it. I love it. Well, Lisa.
Thank you for being here and for sharing some wisdom and shedding some light on young women and girl groups and social toxicity, how we can really help and guide. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks for the work that you do too. You are such an admirable family, and it's just been so neat to get to know you. So I appreciate the work that you do too. Thank you.
Thanks, bye. Lisa. We'll see you again.
Okay. Have a great one.
You too. As well.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.